Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Tech Raptor podcast. I'm Robert Scarpinito, your features editor.
Roland Joguet, site founder.
Andrew Stretch, the epic editor.
Epic. Austin Soother, epic writer.
Epic people on this podcast today, just like the epic gamers that are out there supporting the acquisition of Activision Blizzard by Microsoft. Yes. This week we are going to talk about that because there was a big interview that was done by Variety with Activision CEO Bobby Kotick that is interesting to say the least. We're also going to get into the two big games of the past weekend, Diablo 4 and Street Fighter 6. They're pretty big, you know, just we've all been playing them. Different audiences kind of, but similar vibes in a way. But first, let's get into that interview with Bobby Kotick. Variety ran this piece with a headline, Bobby Kotick breaks his silence, the poor CEO. Embattled Activision CEO addresses toxic workforce claims as Microsoft deal hangs in the balance. As a kind of a big tell-all interview with the man himself in their small, poor headquarters or dingy little headquarters in Santa Monica. You know, one of the less affluent places in LA. No one really goes there. No, I'm being pretty hyperbolic here, but it kind of frames Bobby Kotick as this, like, you know, this victim in all of this, where he's just been, you know, under all of this pressure between this merger and all these allegations that are just really making a bad day for him. You know, it's just really bumming him out that these people are suing the company for, you know, workplace sexual misconduct and workplace, like, awful shit going on.
It's a tell-all interview of how garbage of a CEO he is. Mm. Period.
Yeah, it's like before we even like dive into like the talking about, you know, the interview, what good could they have considered that this could have led to? Like, at what point between all of the allegations, people coming and speaking out about not only the company but how much Kotick was aware of? And then for them to want to put this out as if they were thinking of like, oh, well, they just need to know the real me, right? Like, that's it. Like, makes me think of the GIF from Zombieland with Woody Harrelson's character, like, mopping his crying eyes with a wad of $100 bills.
Yeah.
Like, there's no positive way for this to come up unless everyone who's reading it is absolutely woefully misinformed as to what's been going on. And then for those that are informed, they're now, you know, taking snippets and being like, well, here's where he said this. Here's where he's fucking wrong.
Yeah.
And
he said were like, we did not have a systemic issue with harassment, and there's a very aggressive labor movement. And then he complained about raising compensation rates, which inflation, dude, you know, and there are a lot of other stuff that's just like, it's very tone deaf, very, he's talking to the interviewer as if none of this stuff happened. Yeah. And I would say for anybody outside of the gaming industry, probably not going to really know what's going on. They're going to be like, oh, this poor guy. But anybody who's in the industry, developers, PR, everybody's aware of everything that's going on. People are talking, people talk, you know, there's plenty of, you know, whisper networks within the gaming industry where people support each other. So it's crazy to me that you would just come out and say this. Yep. Full well knowing what's going on.
For the people who aren't aware of who Bobby Kotick is, you can look up his Wikipedia entry that has a subheading under career, sexual harassment investigation. Like, I would hope that even the people who don't know Bobby Kotick can like quickly do a Google and figure out what's going on.
Yeah. Well, what you're missing is it's in white. The text is in white, so it blends in the background. There's a really tiny parenthesis after that says allegedly.
Yeah. You know? I did nothing wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's worth kind of noting, right, that in this interview, Kotick says, and I quote, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you if any of what you read in the inflammatory narrative was truthful. So he's, again, trying to paint himself as like, come on, I'm not stupid. If all of this did happen, I wouldn't talk to you. So clearly I'm talking to you. Obviously, none of this happened. Anyway, afterwards, Axios released this investigation, or this report where investigators have corroborated and substantiated 29 of the claims that are against the company. Like all of these claims that Kotick was just like, they're not true. I wouldn't talk about this if it was true. Mm-hmm. And then here's Axios being like, hey, some investigators have substantiated some of these claims. So before anyone comes at us being like, oh, these people are dunking on this poor white man. I mean, I'm sorry, but there's just enough here where it's like, this stinks.
I mean, he was in Epstein's black book too, just saying. You know, mm-hmm. it's not the most morally upstanding dude from the sound of it, allegedly.
Yeah.
He, like, at one point, there were reports that he, like, threatened one of his assistants, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so, with murder or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have to wonder, like, is this all, you know, obviously we're not the audience for that, the article. I wonder if it's for the investors more than it is, like, you know, the gamers out there.
Could be. I'm sure it's being timed around the acquisition to be used in some of the cases. It's interesting to me that got dropped and then the Axios report was like 2 days later. So I don't know if they knew that the Variety article was coming and they were getting everything ready, or if it was just like perfect timing for him to be like, yeah, none of this happened. And then they're just like, yes, it did.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it was funny too, kind of seeing the article pass around, you know, the game journalism industry, and seeing everybody quote tweet it with their own take, because everybody's like, yeah, this is bullshit, like none of this is true. And it buys into what a lot of corporate America is saying right now in regards to the labor movement and unions and compensation and remote work, and just continues to show that there's a significant number of CEOs that are just completely out of touch. They have no idea what's going on. Yeah. No clue. They don't understand what their people want. They don't understand how to treat their people well. And all they can think about is the bottom line, the investors, and the money. And fuck the people. Sure, it's great that they're the ones that create the product, but I don't care about them. Right. And that's what I continue to get. That's the vibe I get from him. Like, just absolutely terrible. Like, at least Jeff Bezos shuts the fuck up and hangs out on his yacht or whatever and doesn't say anything. Slices
a dick-shaped rocket
to the moon. Yeah,
exactly.
With his cowboy hat, yeah.
Yeah, you can have a garbage company, but, like, maybe just shut up.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it does say a lot, right, that when you think of, like, other like big names in the industry, like creators or heads of companies, like a lot of them, you can think of them and pretty closely tie them to a game. Like Hideo Kojima, you think of Metal Gear, right? You think of Rod Ferguson, you think of like Gears of War, and maybe now like Diablo, or like with Overwatch, you think of Jeff, I'm forgetting his last name, but you know, wrestle with
Kaplan.
Jeff Kaplan. Yeah, wrestle with Jeff, prepare for death. You think of him as like, okay, back in the day, it was Overwatch, right? Like these are big faces of the companies, big names. You think of a game. With Kotick, I think of like a golden parachute. I think of money. I think of stocks. I think of bidness. You know, like I don't think.
Bridge McDuck.
Yeah, I don't think of Call of Duty, right? Which, I mean, I know Call of Duty is like 30 companies working on that game, but it's like he's the face of Activision, and I don't think of him as a game person. Yeah.
Imagine. I think that's the difference between Activision Blizzard and everything else and every other company is you can, and there's some exceptions in the industry, right? But for the most part, somebody says a big name in an executive wing or on the higher tier echelons of the production wing, you're like, oh, that game, or they worked on that game. I don't know if it's because Activision's just become too large or what, but like, anybody who thinks or says Kotick, nobody's thinking of a game, at least not anymore. Like maybe in the past, but after the 2021, the events of 2021, there's just no way. Like,
yeah, he's just a businessman at this point, which I mean, you know, games are large, like they're one of the biggest, I think the biggest industry, right, in entertainment in terms of money. Like GTA 5 still sells
$10 billion industry now, I think. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what the exact... I read something about it the other day, but I don't remember. I knew it was in the billions.
Right. So, I mean, it makes sense that, you know, at some point, business will overtake, you know, the art of gaming or whatever you'd want to call it. But I think it just says a lot here that I don't think of Kotick even remotely close to gaming, aside from being head of a gaming company, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah. When this report dropped... Or when this all started happening in 2021, the gaming market was at $210 million. In 2023, it's at, I think, $400 billion. So, I mean, it's nearly doubled in the last 2 years, which isn't surprising.
Mm-hmm. And half of that also is an GTA 5.
Why we're seeing. Yeah, for real. GTA 5 and COD, and that's about it.
Yeah.
Everything else is an indie game. Mm-hmm.
God of War Ragnarok, probably one of the bigger indie games out, but still pretty indie, you know. But also in that Variety article, I think Kotick said something along the lines of like, this acquisition is the right thing for the, like, this Microsoft acquiring Activision Blizzard is the right thing for the industry. I mean, obviously he'd be very pro acquisition, but
it's weird to evangelicalize it like that. Like, I'm a fan of Xbox. I want this to go through for the simple premise of like, hey, more games on Game Pass. Like, that, honestly, like, that is something that I know that I would enjoy on a small scale. But to say that it's the right thing for the industry to make it something like, no, it's one large company purchasing another large company. It's weird to get so personal about it. Like, I don't think that any other acquisition, like, in the industry, like, you know, Disney buying Marvel, it's not like, oh, it's the right thing to do. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about, Mouse? Like, this makes zero sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's very right, like,
for him, because he gets to fly away on that golden parachute.
That's true. I mean, but I think once you say like a right thing for the industry, that implies like there are wrong things for the industry. Like, it would be wrong. It would be morally objectionable to not let this go through, which when you start inviting that sort of thinking, I don't know. It gets very sketchy to me. You know, I'm not a fan of it.
Especially like if it was just a random person being like, oh, it's the right thing for the industry. It sets up like right versus wrong. But you've literally got the devil on your shoulder saying, hey, you should smoke that cigarette. Like, it's the right thing to do. It's mm-hmm. like, I'm not sure I quite trust you or your opinion. Thank you, devil on my shoulder.
Yeah.
That's actually Lilith on your shoulder.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Nereus on the other one. Yeah.
I would go with Lilith any day then.
The power of simps. That's also a large part of the industry, let's be honest.
That's true. That's the other $100 billion of that $400 billion pie. It's simps.
Figurines.
Yes.
Gotcha.
But so, you know, obviously he is in favor of this acquisition happening. And of course, Xbox executive Sarah Bond took to Twitter to kind of continue echoing that support. She tweeted, and this is just what we were joking about in the beginning, about how their support that they're getting from the audience of this acquisition, in favor of this acquisition, is epic. It's so cool. It's great that the audience is helping us out with this acquisition, which is very weird because I don't think I've ever seen a company in the middle of like being potentially acquired turn to their fans to be like, thank you for supporting us in this arduous moment of ours.
It's console wars on steroids, truly. Like, the consoles are getting involved in the console wars now. It's weird. Mm-hmm. Don't like it. Didn't like it before. Definitely don't like it now.
No, it's weird. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Overall, I don't know who at Variety decided. I mean, I guess like on one hand, it's like if Kotick is offering this interview, I can understand like, oh, I would do the interview. You know what I mean? But then to frame it with breaks his silence is an interesting phrase to use as your leading headline, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. This is just another one of those, then another chapter. Like, thank you for joining us on this other week of the Microsoft acquisition corner. Because every week we're going to talk about this because it is just the ongoing story.
There was that stuff that happened that Microsoft is really pushing hard for the CMA to reevaluate their position like ASAP. I think that they're wanting those conversations to be like not start happening, but to like have happened by the end of next month. So it looks like what everyone was assuming and projecting would be like another hour of conversation about what the next steps are with the CMA. It looks like it'll still be a conversation that ends sooner than we thought, not as soon as we hoped, but you know, it's going to happen. It's, you know, it very much sounds like, you know, Microsoft is the entity Microsoft is about to bully the UK into allowing them to perform this merger.
I just thought of something that might scare me a little. What if at the Xbox showcase, that's going to happen here pretty soon, because we're getting into the Summer Games Fest week. What if they actually talk about this at the showcase?
That'd be weird. Like,
it would be really weird. Yeah.
I would not like that. I just want to hear world exclusive over and over again. That's all I want to hear.
They get someone from the CMAs up to announce Fable.
Yeah. Or, I mean, could you just imagine Phil walking out there as like, hello, fellow gamers. We don't have any games to show you today, but please join us for the next hour as we watch the court hearing happening. We're just going to live stream it to the stage. Join us in cheering for our brethren.
I could imagine them doing it like a
attorney
telethon.
Gives their closing argument and everybody's cheering.
Yeah.
Like a telethon, you've got like the banner down the bottom of the screen, like call now and like text your support to 1-800-XBOX. Let us know that the CMA is fucking wrong.
It scrolls on. It's like, what's up, gamers? Buy another Call of Duty money pass in order to show your support for Microsoft. Activision Blizzard. God.
Which is a 3-month sub to WoW.
It's like some cyberpunk kind of shit. Corporate wars and like, I don't know. It's just weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're seeing late stage capitalism unfold in front of us. And I don't know if I like it, but it is funny to joke about.
Mm-hmm. What we need is Phil Spencer, Jim Ryan, Thunderdome. Let's go.
Celebrity boxing match.
Yeah.
Phil Bowser as the ref.
Yes.
Hey, Creator Clash 3, but it's the CEO Clash. Just have a whole bunch of CEOs show up, beat the shit out of each other.
That actually is too funny.
And whoever wins gets to own all the companies. Just make a monopoly right there.
That's way more interesting than like a corporate poker match or something like super bland like that.
Yeah. Let's shift over and talk about PlayStation, because they're also doing some very funny, interesting stuff in the last week here. I mean, there's a lot of also other court cases that are going on and, you know, things with that nature about like them having a potential monopoly and the store and all that. But what I want to focus on here is Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart, because it's funny, it's silly, it's very dumb. But so when it came out 2 years ago now, and, you know, they were announcing it and they were like, oh, only through the power, through the solid state drive of the PlayStation 5 registered trademark, could we make this video game happen, because of the dimensional hopping and dimension rifts and et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, it was just about to be a showpiece of like, yeah, the PS5 is that powerful. It's the only game that can do this. Anyway, later in a few months, you can buy that game on PC soon. It will hit Steam storefronts. We don't have the recommended or minimum specs yet, but
just yeah, funny.
I'm
expecting to see SSD is a requirement for sure. But
4080.
It's just marketing gone wild. When it's only possible. Godfall had the same. I remember we got the trailer for Godfall a week or two prior to when it was announced at the Game Awards that year.
Yeah.
And this was the first PlayStation 5 game that has ever been announced. I think it was in this logo that we saw, it was in this trailer that we saw the PS5 logo for the first time, which, you know, it was a surprise to no one, but still. And the amount of marketing that was in that email as well, like only possible with the power of the PlayStation 5. No other console could do this. And those games are now on the PS4 and Xbox One.
Yeah.
That it's just like, why go so hyperbolic?
It's also funny because I reviewed Godfall on the PC, and yeah, it's probably like, okay, it's only possible on this console, but it just kind of invalidates it when you can play it on other platforms nonetheless.
Yeah. And I mean, you two both mentioned that, oh, they're probably going to require an SSD for the game, right? Returnal went to PC, and even the minimum spec says SSD recommended, which I know Returnal wasn't as like only with the PS5 with its marketing, but I also wouldn't be surprised if Ratchet and Clank said SSD recommended, not required.
I mean, does not have SSDs?
Some people don't. Some people play on toasters.
I'm not like a technical guy, but couldn't you, like, nothing's stopping you from using a hard drive. It's just going to take a long ass time to load, right?
Not even a long ass. It will take longer. It might be the difference between 2 seconds and 8 seconds.
But then I won't feel as immersed in my dimension hopping adventure stretch. Am I really playing Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart if I have to wait 8 seconds after I press R1?
How long those shaders are going to take.
I was looking at the PC release and like all of their updates and like features and stuff. And their support for triple monitor, like full across, is like, do I want a 100% complete Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart again? Because that was a good fucking game.
It was.
I would love to play it on a stupid wide interface.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's like, I'm glad that it is coming to PC. Like, I don't want this to come off as like, oh, it should only be on the PS5, because then my PS5 won't feel special. Like, that's not really the point here. I just think it's very silly seeing their approach to marketing just kind of be immediately undermined by themselves 2 years later, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and it will probably happen again and again and again. As we see, I don't know what the next big first party Sony stuff coming out is, but I'm sure that will have marketing that specifically revolves around how fucking fast their SSD is.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it is pretty fast. Like, don't get us wrong, it's really good. It's just like, it's not the only device that can play video games.
But yeah, it like last generation, everything was about the teraflops. And like, oh man, yours has 9, but mine has 12. But if I get the better version, mine now has 13.4. And it's like, that means nothing. And then this generation, it's all about the SSD. Got to have the fastest SSD in the business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't recall really seeing Xbox push that, right? Like, I mean, I know it's been a while since they've had like a big marketing push for a first party exclusive that's been months in the making. But I mean, like for Starfield, they weren't like, and through the wondrous power of quantum computing and our Xbox Series X, we can procedurally generate billions of planets. Like, you know, they're not hyping up the console.
They haven't done any of that marketing specifically for a game. Definitely when they were selling the console, and especially as they were trying to market and make people be okay with buying the $200 1 terabyte expansion. There was a lot of talk about like how using this amazing system, and they gave it a fluff marketing name. Even though this is external, you can plug it in and it's just as fast as an internal SSD. And they hyped the shit out of that, but you know, either you do or you don't have that memory card. Past that, I don't think that they've been pushing as much on the spec side of it. They're not trying to craft that premium experience of like, oh, if you're not on a PS5, you're not even playing fucking video games. You're playing PowerPoint. Fuck you.
Now, Robert, you forget the substantial marketing push for Redfall and the cutting-edge technology that game had.
You mean 30 how
FPS?
The random AI behind the enemies? Because that was cutting-edge in a different way.
Yes, only possible on the Xbox.
I did play it on PC, too. Well, I guess maybe that's part of, like, Xbox. I mean, they can't really say only on Xbox. They're also, like, because, like, every one of their games is also coming to PC, right? So.
True.
Yeah. So.
But only 30 FPS on Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, have we heard news of when that patch is coming out?
I hear sometime in never.
That reminds me, didn't Jason Schreier have an article about Redfall and its disastrous development on Bloomberg?
Yeah. You're right.
70% of the developers that worked on Prey left the studio between. And a lot of people were like, well, it's because they're single player developers, like making that shift from single player to like a live service type thing is not easy. It's a completely different mindset. Mm-hmm. And if you don't enjoy that mindset, you'll go elsewhere.
Yeah. And I think in that article too, there was people at Arkane hoping that after Microsoft acquired ZeniMax, they would just kill the project. And Microsoft did not kill the project, so they had to keep making it, which is a shame to see.
Hey man, they canceled it on PlayStation at least.
Well, they just they couldn't handle the SSD. That's cold, man. The SSD was too powerful for Redfall, you know.
This year's been like, to go a little off topic, this year's been painful industry wise. Like, we have seen hundreds of layoffs over the last 2 weeks from dozens of studios. We've seen some of the worst game launches in years between Redfall and Gollum.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen just a never-ending slap fight between Sony and Xbox at the moment. It has been kind of a painful year for this industry.
Yeah.
And I'm legitimately worried for the next couple of months.
Well, also, like, yeah, industry news, everything has been pretty shite. But on the flip side, this year is going to go down as another one of like those years where just like everything fucking came out. This is going to be another 2007. Mm-hmm. That people are just going to be like, man, 2023, that was like the year for gaming. Because we've had so many just stacked hits back after back.
That's the crazy thing to think about too, is we have all of these hits coming out, but also like all these layoffs.
It's
very strange for me to be like, yeah, this, holy crap, the end of June is gonna fucking kill me, while also seeing, you know, the layoffs.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird, it feels like a byproduct of COVID, right? Because we're seeing like in the tech sector, like, you know, like the more of the Facebooks and Meta, right, that sort of space, where there's a lot of layoffs happening there, because it kind of feels like it's them, you know, they scaled up too much during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And then realized, oh, the pandemic ended at some point, we got to scale back. So I think we're kind of seeing that in the gaming space, but at the same time, what we're seeing in the, like, the video games themselves here is like that 3 years of incubation, the pandemic, right, is like leading to this point where now, you know, they've been back in the office, you know, for some of them for the past year or a year and a half or so by now, getting back into making the games. And like here now, all those games that maybe that were like put on ice or slowed down around 2020 ramped back up, and now we're coming out here in 23. You know, that's why we're seeing so many of these large, big, epic, great video games coming out. I mean, remember, like, I think Tears of the Kingdom, we knew about that in like 2019, right? When that's the first time we saw Daddy Ganon, Mummy Ganon.
Was it?
I think
so.
It feels
like a lifetime ago, honestly.
It really does.
Yeah, and I want to say it was 2019 when that reveal trailer came out.
It was, yeah, announced in 2019. Then it was just like, it's going to be a sequel to Breath of the Wild.
Right, like, we didn't know the name of it. And I'd be willing to bet that maybe... Uh-huh.
It was at 2021 that we got a gameplay story and a 2020 release window trailer, and then it got pushed back to Q2 2023.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I would bet that maybe like the reveal in 2019, they were not expecting a pandemic to slow down development time, which is maybe why it felt so long between like how long we've known about the game and then until when we got it. Obviously, the wait was worth it. Some people like the video game for some reason, I guess. I don't know. Maybe it's a good game.
Is that their excuse for Metroid Prime 4 as well?
I think there are many other many other factors at play with Metroid Prime 4, perhaps. But, hey, it's okay. The Switch is here to save the industry this year, because Everybody stop. Everybody 1-2 switch is coming soon.
Hey, as an owner of the first 1-2 switch game, there's some pretty fun stuff on there.
Mm.
It was not the greatest. It was definitely no Wii Sports or like Wii Play. It was fun. It was enjoyable. For families with kids, they're going to enjoy it.
Mm. Wii Sports was just the peak of gaming. I mean, period.
I mean, you kind of joke, but also like kind of. I mean, in terms of sales, it kind of.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of sales, but also like, I don't think there's anybody who doesn't look back fondly on that and like playing that with friends and stuff. So
are you allowed to rest on the laurels of sales? Wasn't Wii Sports like a package title for a lot of time?
And
we don't talk about that.
And
okay,
that's just a footnote. We ignore that.
I would not be surprised if, like, I don't know, 30 years from now, 40 years from now, when we're all in a nursing home, we'll just be bowling on the Wii Sports still. Like, it'll just, you know, like, kids
will have a retro console.
Well, it's already a retro console, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, didn't we just get the new one for Nintendo Switch?
Yeah, the Wii Sports Switch or whatever. Switch Wii Sports.
Nintendo Switch Sports?
Yeah.
Can't play that because I have the light.
Oh, the Switch Lite, the little baby one. You can't just take the whole thing and like swing it like a bowling ball. That doesn't work.
Can you fucking imagine?
Use it as a tennis racket.
just swing the whole thing.
Then we can go back to having viral. Yeah, we can go back to having viral videos of people destroying their TVs with stray Wiimotes.
Oh man. Man destroys 75-inch TV with full Switch Lite.
Yes. All right, let's shift over though and talk about other games. The big games that came out for the past week. I think Diablo 4. I mean, you know, yes, it was made by Blizzard, and yes, there's been a lot of allegations going on there, but it has also in early access already still just, you know, people are talking about it. It is all over. It's kind of hard to ignore it as a video game. This is a potential shot at Blizzard, maybe, you know, in the gaming space, redeeming themselves a bit, you know, just in terms of software. I know, Austin, you reviewed Diablo 4, so you have like dozens of hours on all of us here, and right, you said you've been playing it for the past 2 days or so. Stretch, you haven't played it, right?
Nope.
No. All right, so Austin, you want to tell us you know, how are you feeling about Diablo 4?
Yeah, like,
it's the early moments, you know, here.
It's really telling that even after, like, I don't know, 50 plus hours of reviewing it, I just want to come back and play this early access release. And even now during this podcast, I'm like, all right, when can I get back to playing Diablo? Because I'm freaking addicted to it. And I think that that's kind of the same with a lot of people. Like, I have a lot of friends on Battle.net and they are all playing Diablo. And it's getting, you know, wide acclaim, not just from critics, but from, like, you know, regular people. So, yeah, even in the early game, it's, yeah, I need more.
You need more, yeah.
I need more, yeah.
I think it's scratched an itch that we've been looking for years. Like,
you know, there's Porsche a cream 3 for
was
that,
an
right?
absolute must.
Ooh.
What did you say?
What the fuck?
Never mind. Move on.
There's a cream for that rut for your itch. But that's
not that old.
Well, I mean,
just because I get out of bed and my knees hurt doesn't mean I need a cream. Thank you.
Okay, but it sounds like you need something.
Just knee replacement.
Boomer.
No, it's like it. I've been looking for kind of that isometric hack and slash probably since the last time I played Diablo 3. Like, or maybe Path of Exile. Like, Path of Exile also had a very satisfying game loop. Yeah. There hasn't been one for me, and I've tried a bunch that kind of clicked like Diablo has. It's got the right I mean, everything to it for the most part. Like it rewards you for exploring. It rewards you for going through dungeons. There's just random side quests that pop up, and it doesn't get boring. Which is usually the problem I run into with a lot of these is you get 10, 15 hours in and you're like, fuck, this is repetitive and I don't feel like I connect with this game world at all. Mm-hmm. But they've built the vibe around Diablo the right way.
Do you find that it's not getting repetitive because the combat and the gameplay is always iterating upon itself, or that like the story is keeping you engaged, or if you're playing with friends, that it's like a valuable and rewarding co-op experience?
So the skills progression is good. They're not handing you a bunch right out the gate, and you can kind of respec and play around easy. I think the one thing for me is the boss fights feel a lot like WoW raids, where you are actively dodging AoE. You are having to kind of understand what the boss is going to do and avoid specific attacks. And it does kind of go through the same gameplay loop as a WoW raid, in that every boss or you know world event has this progressive this repeat. And to me, that was what always drew me to WoW, was the kind of complexity of the boss fights. Mm-hmm. And so rather than a lot of these isometric ones where it feels like you're just running up the boss and just hitting it for 5 minutes, I am hitting it, moving, dodging, okay, this is coming, do this. It's a lot more active.
And it's keeping you engaged.
I think that's the factor, is I feel engaged. The story's not bad. The side quests are interesting. And there's just a lot you can, well, I mean,
some of them are,
I say interesting, fight. Not good. Those are pretty repetitive, but
like, there's that one chain of side quests in that first, the Kyovishad, the main town, where it's like that lady who can like exercise people.
Yeah.
Like I found those are like, okay, that's like, I mean, it's just a quick little 5 minutes, but it's like, oh, okay, it's interesting enough. It's more interesting than like, go get that stick for me.
Yeah,
I think my main complaint with the game was the side quests, just not like, you know, you could highlight the world of Sanctuary really well through these side quests, but most of them just boil down to kill, you know, 20 bandits or whatever. I feel like they could have done a lot more and innovated on it.
I mean, I agree, but also, can you name a dungeon that isn't get to the end and kill the boss?
Look, I mean,
Diablo is a very repetitive game.
Here's the thing about dungeons is that they originally used to be like that in previous games, just get to them and kill the boss, but they try to add objectives in between to make it a bit more interesting.
Oh, yeah, like, hear me out. Get the two MacGuffins to open the door to kill the boss.
Hey, I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm just saying, you know, whether it might get repetitive after a while, although I think you should give Nightmare Dungeons a fair shake when you get to the end game, because that kind of spices things up a bit more. But since a lot of people aren't there yet, you know, we can save that for later.
It takes a lot to get to that, yeah.
But I think the one thing that kept me coming back is not the boss fights, but like Rut said, the sense of progression and like rewards. I don't think I'm going to put down the game until I like, you know, find all the altars of Lilith and explore the entire world and, you know, complete the region goals. Like, there is so much to do and it rewards you for it. And because you get those rewards, it, you know, I just don't want to put it down.
Mm. That ooh, a piece of candy feel. I know as well. It's a good one.
And plus it's a live service game. So we have to realize that the season isn't even out yet. That comes next month. And there's going to be undoubtedly so many updates that either change the world of Sanctuary or maybe even add on to it. I tried to ask Blizzard developers about it, but you know, they're very tight-lipped about that. But I have a feeling that we're going to see the world expand over time.
Yeah, I can sense like a very Destiny-style progression to everything going on here. Or just like after a year or two, like a whole, maybe Kyovishad gets destroyed or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There'll be some kind of cataclysm.
you could say. Mm-hmm. And maybe a Lich King will come back and exact his wrath.
That's about my WoW knowledge that I've just exhausted immediately. So I won't be able to carry on with any more jokes.
Burnt through it already.
Kung Fu Panda will come and do something. I know there are pandas in that one.
Look, we could talk about WoW, but you know, Rut and I might actually throw hands. It's interesting though, because you have a whole continent to the west that is not in the game at all. That was in Diablo 3. And then you have even like part of the continent that you're on in Diablo 4. It's basically cut in half. There's like a huge jungle underneath what regions we're in. Mm. And I also noticed some like blank spaces in the map. So there's certainly room for more.
Yeah.
Do you know what the season passes are going to consist of? Like, is it just going to be like complete X Nightmare Dungeons? No clue.
We've had some like press documents or press pictures that we saw. Those are the only things that we can go off of, and it's like, you know, complete different goals. As you play, you'll unlock more. That's what Blizzard told me. You'll progress your pass, and then everything in the season pass is cosmetic as well, so you don't have to worry about like gaining power. Like, that power is gained through actual gameplay, not through like you know, there's no fast tracking it, I guess.
Yeah. Well,
the nice thing about the cosmetic system too is that no matter what you're wielding, you can make it look like something you like. Like, I found this dope ass crystal sword that I've just been reskinning everything with.
Mm-hmm. Well, because I remember that there's like the free battle pass where you don't have to pay any extra money besides the $70 upfront to play the video game, where that it's like you unlock every, you know, I don't know, probably every few levels or so, it would be my guess is how it works. But I think that does have in-game, like whatever reward that is, does have some in-game effect. But then everything else, if you buy it, is cosmetic. So that's so like buying the battle pass will not make you better at Diablo.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
We'll have to see. I have a feeling it's going to be a lot like Overwatch's battle pass. But hopefully better, because those haven't been that great.
So there isn't going to be any PvE content in Diablo 4?
No, it's all PvP. Yeah, from the start, you're killing other people in the game.
Bosses, other players.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's very Dead by Daylight kind of situation going on here.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. No, I do agree though with Rudd about the bosses. I think that so far has been my favorite thing about the game, especially because in that server slam in the beta, there was that one like world boss where like everyone joined in, and that felt like legitimately like a raid boss in a way. Yeah, so like it's not just you and like four people in your party, it's like you and then everyone else who's in the area, like every other player is in the area, so it could be like 20, 30 people or something fighting just this huge, I don't know, dragon or whatever they're gonna.
I think it's it was 12 players max in the beta.
Oh, is
I
it?
I haven't had a chance to actually fight the world bosses because it's safe for in game. And of course I couldn't really do that while reviewing it, but I'd be interested to see like more of the monsters you have to fight for that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. Diablo 4 is looking not too bad. You know, it's on PC and all PS5 and Xbox. No, through the power of PS5 on this one. So everyone can really play it except for Switch owners, but kind of not.
Maybe a cloud version in the future.
Yeah. Or they could play Diablo Immortal on their phones. Because everyone has a phone.
Yes.
And is rich enough to max out their character.
Yep.
It's only like $200,000. Come on.
Just is it?
Phone up.
Phone got up a Kozik. Second mortgage. It's fine.
What the fuck?
It was up there, definitely.
Jeez.
It was like $140,000 or something crazy.
And that is too much. I want to shift over and talk about Street Fighter VI. I reviewed that game while all the reviewers were playing Diablo, I was, and all the other people were playing Tears of the Kingdom. I was playing Street Fighter, which was one of the most difficult decisions I've made in my life because I'm so far behind in Tears of the Kingdom than I could have been, but definitely worth it because Street Fighter VI is fucking great. It is like, I think I wrote in my review that it's just the latest in a string of victories from Capcom since like Resident Evil 7. Like, they're just knocking shit out of the park with that RE engine. And it's just so weird to me that the RE engine has given us like Resident Evil and Devil May Cry and now Street Fighter. Like, that's all running on the same tech, I think. Yeah. I don't really know how engines work, but they're all RE engine, which is kind of crazy to me. But no, Street Fighter 6 is pretty fucking good. It's had a few betas since, you know, like for the past year or so, and now it's like fully out. There are people out there who are playing it. I haven't played as much online yet since it went live, but I played a bunch of online matches in the beta that was like 2 weeks ago or so. I think I played like 60 matches and won 10. So
so it's a fighting game.
I'm bad, yeah. I'm pretty bad at it, but it hits very well. It's like that perfect mix of like stylish and like welcoming to newcomers, but also a lot of depth for like veterans. And for the newcomers that get really into it, there's like such a huge on-ramp, a long on-ramp for them to like work their way up to being at least okay enough to win half their games. You know, like, I'm not even there yet, and I've been playing this game for like 20-30 hours, you know?
Yeah. I've been loving watching players' social media reactions and stuff, not only to the game itself, but to the world mode, like the world tour mode.
World tour, yeah.
And the better fleshing out and like development of all the characters. I think that this is the, like, I was expecting to see, you know, people styling on other people in online and people's abomination creations. And instead, what's like filling all of my social media timelines is like people really digging the vibes of different other characters and this and that. And I think that that's really cool and like a really, you know, big thing for a game, you know, that has had a story for so long, but for people to like really get into it. And some of the dialogue that has been put in this game is just like chef's kiss, fantastic.
Yeah, it's half and half. I feel like some of the dialogue is kind of like B movie 90s, like so cringe it's funny kind of stuff.
That's the stuff that I've been seeing. That's what I'm talking about. So,
like, there's a scene where it's like you, like your character and another character are like the rookies that go under Luke's. Like, Luke is teaching you how to be a Street Fighter, right? And he's like, okay, but the first thing you need to do is like build camaraderie. So like go out there and buy pink hats together and stand together and wear pink hats. And your friend is like, is this what the kids call cringe? I'm like, bro, how do you say that and make it cringe? Like, how do you inherently make it cringe?
I'm glad that Stretch mentioned the world tour mode, because I've been having probably the most fun with that just because of how batshit crazy it is. It's not serious at all, but it takes itself kind of seriously in a funny way. Like, there's freaking man-killing Roombas roaming the streets at night, and you can just walk up to a random person, uppercut them, and then get in a fight, and everybody's like, whoa, awesome fight. And, like, I don't know, I remember doing a quest last night where I had to, like, get leather from some guy, and he's like, you want this leather on me? Well, I'm wearing it. You're gonna have to beat me up for it. And you beat the shit out of him, and he's like, all right, well, that's the rules.
That's the breaks.
And, like, yeah. I guess Italy is, like, a caricature of itself in this one. I got to see Italy in the World Tour mode, and it's just, like, this big Colosseum. Mm-hmm. And there's Spartans and shit, and I'm just like, wow, okay, we're doing this. Yeah. I don't know, I love it. It's great.
I wouldn't say it's like a caricature of Italy. I think it's just like fit, like, because you're going to Italy to see Marissa, so I was like, where would Marissa hang out? Of course, a Colosseum with her best friend, a lion. Like, you know, it's more about her than it is, I think, about Italy.
That,
you know,
that sounds like a JoJo subplot more than it does. if you told me, this is either from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure or from Street Fighter 6. I would not have guessed Street Fighter 6 for a random quick trip to Italy to fight a lion.
Yes.
It very much feels like JoJo, like, just in the absurdity that it pulls.
Mm-hmm. I've been likening it to, it feels like Yakuza. It feels like Yakuza Light. It's not as wacky, and nor is it as fleshed out. I do think, like, World Tour, it's fun, but I personally don't think it's like the reason to keep coming back to Street Fighter for me, because it does get a little samey after a while, and I'm personally not as connected with the whole like build your avatar to like have Ryu Shoryuken, but then like Kimberly sprint and like Manon's like grapple, you know, because you can like attach all these different special abilities to your character, but you can never really have like a full suite unless you grind it out. Mm. And I don't know, I'm just more into like pick a character,
yeah,
learn their moves and all that.
Yeah, it's one aspect is definitely for the fighting game fans, and another is for like the I guess for lack of a better term, like fighting game RPG fans.
Yeah, I mean, it is an RPG, and it does really well at being an RPG. Like you equip different things, and you get different stats out of it, and all that. Yeah,
just a skill tree, even. There is a skill tree. That's where we differ, Robert, because I went into it pretty much only playing single player. That's my intent with Street Fighter VI. I know I'm never gonna be that great, and I just get too competitive, but I'm kind of just focusing on getting better with the characters I like and beating, you know, NPCs at a certain level or an arcade mode, and that's good enough for me. And then on top of that, the World Tour mode is just a surprising it's a surprisingly fun time, and I actually do look forward to mix and matching the different abilities, even though it's not really gonna like help me learn how to play a character in the long run. Might give me an idea of like what kind of abilities they have, but I was looking for
that. I kind of disagree with. I do think that being able to mix and match is actually a great way to learn the game, because that's all World Tour is. I think I wrote about it in the review that World Tour is just a cleverly disguised tutorial, and probably one of the best tutorials for fighting games. Probably one of my favorite examples of how they do it is there's this mechanic where, so when you go to fight someone, right, it's not like Yakuza where it's like third or 3D, like you can move forward, backward, right? It creates a 2D plane, and it's just like your typical like left to right Street Fighter, right? So lots of enemies have this thing called pressure time, where they'll flash white for a second, and if you hit them in that moment, you like mega stun them, and you can do, you know, follow up and do big damage. But what they don't tell you, but what you will intuit after playing it for a couple hours, is that that moment they flash white is the moment you're supposed to punish them, like after they whiff a move. So what they're teaching you is learn how to block, learn how to dodge, and then learn how to punish the enemy when they put all their resources into this move that you now have the ability to punish, you know. And that's like the characters, the like the random street thugs you'll fight in Street Fighter, they're not like, they don't have you know, moves that the main fighters will, like they're kind of slower and like meant to teach you, but it's still a mechanic you'll then kind of intuit and understand if you want to then progress and start playing, like, you know, maybe more arcade or like local competitive, that sort of stuff, you know.
I think what I meant was, it's, I don't think it's necessarily gonna help me get better at a single character unless you put all their moves on your character, but in terms of learning the fundamentals, yeah, it's really good at that. And there's, you know, like those side quests that teach you, you know, like one of them is don't take any damage and beat this guy, and I guess that kind of teaches you how to, like, you know, block
play and safe.
Yeah, play safe. But hey, even if it's a tutorial, like I don't think that should dissuade people from trying it out, because it's still kind of a blast to play.
No, I agree. Like I don't mean it in like a disparaging way or anything. I do think it's fun for what it is. And I think the tutorial aspect of it, yeah, it's not going to teach you like one character. It's just going to teach you the fundamentals that you should then like go and lab with. Like if you choose a character, you want to go into like practice mode and like learn their combos and like learn their specials and all that. But at least in like learning the fundamentals, I found like, because I played a lot of fighting games throughout my life and I've never been good at them. I'm still not good, but I think I understand a lot more than I ever have because of the story mode, because of the way it explains and conveys the information of the fundamentals. Like now I, at least like when I lose in an online match, like I can more clearly identify the mistakes that I made, you know, and understand like, okay, this is what I need to work on, or I need to like learn to punish that, or like clean up my inputs a bit to like get this right. And if that's what Street Fighter can do for me and for potentially many other like fighting game curious or beginner people out there, I could see this game having a pretty long tail in the FGC, and like, it's fucking Street
Less
Fighter.
Daunting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, I can see it being, and it already is very complex or in appealing to people who are looking for a serious fighting game. Like, I haven't really been that interested in watching fighting game streams, but I definitely want to tune into like Evo this year and see what people do with Street Fighter. I find myself even labbing, like you said, in the training mode. I picked Dalsim.
The stretchy boy.
Kind of a toxic character, but like, I'm having a lot of fun alternating between him and the World Tour mode, and I think I get a lot of satisfaction from just like learning more about that character and getting better at him, even if it's through training mode. And that's what I was looking for in the game, and that's what I'm getting.
Yeah.
That I think sounds like the most glowing recommendation of any fighting game. Not as much that it's like in the teaching you, but it sounds like it's teaching you how to enjoy when you lose, because like it gives you the tools to understand how. And I think that that's probably something that a lot of fighting games should figure out how to do better.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think just the whole online experience is seamless, because like even if you lose, the rematch is like instant. Like if you want a rematch, you just press A and go. And that is, I mean, it sounds silly. It sounds like impatient, but at the same time, that lower barrier of entry to like get back in. I want to see if I can like block that thing that's been bothering me, or see if I can like punish that move that I always block, but I don't time it just right. And then I get punished. You know what I mean? It's like, you can immediately get back in and practice, because there is value in like, if you're playing the same and like you're playing against the same person, what you start learning is not the way Kimberly plays, but the way their Kimberly plays, if that makes sense. So then you start kind of learning their like the person behind the stick. You learn their tricks, you learn what they like to do, and then you learn to punish what they tend to do, you know? And that's kind of the fun of it.
There's also some spectating options. So I actually joined Robert in the beta, and we played a few matches, and then I spectated him. And what I see is different from what he sees. I can see the inputs on both the opponent and what he's doing. So in that way, I feel like it's also incentivizing people to watch like better players and learn what kind of inputs they're doing. Not to mention like the training mode has like tutorials for characters. Then they have combo tutorials, and just like is literally the most robust training mode I've seen in any fighting game. And you can basically replicate any situation and then practice it. Yeah. It's pretty awesome.
And something too, I don't know if you saw this in your spectating mode, but when I spectated a few people in the beta, something else I would show up too is frame data. But the way they show it, I thought was really brilliant, because frame data is just one of those things that like that's always felt like arcane to me. You know, like if people say, oh, you got to study the frame data, I'm like, bro, I'm not here to go to college. But what happens is if someone like, so if player two hits player one and player one blocks, right? The idea of frame data is, you know, if player two is still positive frames, they get to move first. Like they're more likely to still not get interrupted by an attack if they choose to attack again. And the way they show it in spectator mode is just like a plus two or plus three shows up above player two, and a minus two or minus three shows up above player one. So it's just like, it's just a small cue showing you like, okay, whose quote unquote turn is it right now? Or who's, you know, who's ahead by a little bit, right? And like in reality, the thing is, for most people listening to this, for most people playing the game, frame data really fucking doesn't matter, because you're not a pro. You're not, you don't have all the inputs like down to a machine, a mechanical science like the pros do, right? Where like you can look at, I'm ahead by three, this is my chance. Like you're not going to be the kind of person who can take advantage of it, but you're at least going to be able to be the person who can know that and at least kind of understand and intuit what that means in a more real sense, you know. But yeah, Street Fighter 6 is cool, man. I haven't even talked about the roster. The roster's great. Yeah, all great characters, all fun. Like you're gonna find someone you like. It's a lot of fun. If you are even remotely curious about fighting games, I would highly recommend like Street Fighter 6 is the one right now to pick up and try.
It sounds like it has an easier barrier to entry than others.
Absolutely.
In the tutorial and in a lot of what you're talking through, I think that's the thing that probably prevent a lot of people from trying it, is like, oh fuck, I have to spend all this time figuring out the combos and understanding this and understanding that. But the game is actively like, hey dumbass, here's what you need to know, which is you know, that kind of feedback is a lot more prevalent in like shooters and stuff, because yeah, but fighting games have so much complexity and kind of mechanical learnings to them that it's hard to, without an assist, understand what you're doing wrong or what you might need to tweak.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But this one, at least it gives you the chance. So, and I think too, if you are curious, I think the sooner the better, because the longer the game is out, the more everyone else will generally get better. And the worse it might feel, especially if you're the kind of person who's a, like, doesn't like to lose or gets too competitive about it. Yeah.
Get in while everyone else also sucks.
Exactly. Because that's the thing, is like, you can get intimidated and in your head, like, oh, every, like, if I play against someone, they're going to be better than me. Like, actually, I don't know. Like, they might suck too. Like, because when I played the beta, I got my ass handed to me, but also because I think most people who were like, the Street Fighter beta is on, I must play the beta, are probably people who played a lot of Street Fighter. Yeah. And now, in the, like, I've been playing casual matches while everyone else is out. Like, everyone else can play it. I've played better than I did in the beta, that's for sure. And I don't think it's just my skill that has gotten a little better, you know? I think it's the people I fight.
Recommendation, if you're looking to improve, try ranked, and it'll put you in the bracket. And if you do worse, you'll go down to the bracket that you're supposed to be. So you'll be playing against people that are your skill level no matter what, as long as the ranking system is doing its job properly.
Right. And hey, bronze is still a medal.
Yes.
All right. Bronze is still a medal.
Wood is not.
You are right about that.
And that's the joke, Wood League.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think that does it for this week's episode of the Tech Wrapper podcast. We hope you enjoyed. And if you did, let us know down below, are you playing Street Fighter 6? If so, who's your main, or who do you want to main? And also, how many games have you lost so far? Because mine is probably in the double digits. And if you did enjoy this episode, also, you know, give us a like on YouTube or give us a rating on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. That would really help us out a lot. And if you want more from us, we're always publishing news, reviews, and features, et cetera, at techwrapper.net. We actually have an opinion piece up on the site right now that goes a little deeper into the whole Ratchet and Clank, power of PS5, all of that fun stuff. So you can check that out on our site. But if you want more of this show, I believe we will be back next week, but I won't be here, and neither will Auden, because we will be in LA doing LA things. But we will have a show
for not E3.
We will also have we're going to have a lot of coverage this week too for Summer Game Fest and all the like residual announcements and shows that are going on. Cause this is the season to keep a YouTube or Twitch tab open to watch some announcements. So
yep,
this will be fun.
Have to get lit.
Yep. So we will see you next week. Goodbye.